Good morning. Today is February 23rd. We're having a Finance Committee meeting today rather than on the first or second Thursday of the month because of my schedule this month. And just to give you a heads up, for March, we will continue the same pattern into March, and we will have a Finance Committee meeting on the same day as the board meeting in March and not on the first or second Thursday of March. So the first order of business is, of course, approval of the agenda. So good morning, and can I get a motion to approve the rather brief agenda that's before you this morning?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Next issue is approval of minutes. These are the minutes of our last meeting on January 26, 2017, where we had a work session on the FY 2018 operating budget. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the January meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. It's passed. The minutes are approved as presented. Before I provide an overview of the one item on today's agenda, I would like to first take the opportunity to thank everyone who provided feedback on Metro's proposed fiscal year 2018 budget, both in person at the January public hearing and online. We had approximately 80 speakers here at the public hearing on January 30th, along with almost 11,000 survey responses, both online and in paper, and 3,100 additional written comments. The board is reviewing the feedback it received as it worked towards budget approval in March. And so we will be receiving a report on the public hearing early in March, and that will put us in a good shape, good timeline to approve the FY18 budget, hopefully at our meeting at the end of March. Today's presentation is on the current fiscal year, that's FY2017, and Metro's fairly disappointing financial performance during the first half of the fiscal year, including an update on ridership, as well as on Metro's capital investment. Today's presentation will also outline the steps Metro is taking to mitigate this year's revenue challenges and to align expenses and revenues throughout the remainder of the fiscal year ending June 30th. With that brief introduction, I'll turn the floor over to Mr. Anaseke and Mr. Webster. Welcome, Mr. Webster, for the presentation and for our subsequent session. Gentlemen.
All right, Mr. Chairman, if I could, before I turn it over to Tom and Dennis, I want to just make a few comments, just put in some context both the second quarter update that we're about to give you on the capital and the operating side, and particularly for some of the new members that weren't here, just give a little bit of history. Last April, we presented a $950 million on the capital side, talking capital first. Last April, we presented a $950 million capital program. When I came on board, we had a $1.1 billion program that was being proposed at the time, and as I got more accustomed to the operation, I reduced that to $950 million. Because the previous year we had only delivered 65% of the previous year's budget, and my concern was is that we were both tying up local jurisdictional dollars, but more importantly, we were not delivering the service reliability and the customer and the safety projects that we were committed to. So with that, we did come in with a $950 million program at that time. And we had suggested at that time that we will continue to work, and we will work to get it back up to the $1.1 billion, and we would come back to the board as that evolved if we got it tighter and tighter. We were successful, actually, in the 16 budget to deliver 85% of that budget at that time with the remaining 6 months we had in the year, you know, when we got on board. And so that is all good, again, for the customers. In November, this November, we did bring to the board an increase from the 950 to the $1.1 billion, which was approved. And at that time, we did alert you that the potential that we could actually get to the $1.2 billion was articulated. And it's primarily driven by the core areas that we've been focusing on, the 7,000 Ks and the rail track work and the new buses. Again, which all tied to safety and service reliability, and eventually drive the revenue numbers, because the more reliable and safe the system, we believe the numbers will go up. So with a half a year under our belt, again, we do see the potential of us actually going beyond the $1.1 billion to $1.2 billion as we continue to put pressure on the delivery, particularly the 7,000 cars and what we're doing on the track work. So the good news is that that is fundamental work that we have to do, and we are delivering it. It represents extremely aggressive capital program. It's the most aggressive delivery of the capital program since the construction of the system itself, that we've exceeded the one billion mark. So those are all good signs. They do present, you know, financial issues for us, but those are all good signs, again, because it eventually impacts the customers. On the operating side, turn to the operating side, what you'll see when Dennis goes through that in a minute is that actually we've been very successful in the first 6 months of the year in dealing with a revenue drop by basically controlling our operating costs. We basically saved $59 million over budget in the first 6 months of the year, so that is very good. But this has been an extraordinary year, no doubt about it. SafeTrak has an impact. Some of the ongoing reliability issues and the ongoing market conditions have also come into play. So as a result, we are projecting for the end of the fiscal year that will be that our projected revenues will be down $125 million. So we have a net issue to deal with in the remaining 6 months of $75 million. So that's basically what we've got to fix. We have, to date, we have managed the program to basically keep it whole in the first 6 months, roughly hold, and we will do that for the remaining 6 months. So at this time, I don't foresee asking the local jurisdictions for any additional dollars in the 17 budget, but if I get two blizzards in the next, by the end of March, we may have a different discussion. But, you know, so again, this is what I know now. I don't see that happening, and we will control it, and Dennis will walk you through some of the things that we're proposing. Before turning it over to Dennis, though, I think just one final comment to put this in a little bit larger context. The aggressive steps that we've been taking over the last year, both in 17, what we've seen in the first 6 months of 17, what we will be doing from now until the end of this fiscal year, and what we've proposed and what you're all wrestling with the 18 budget are things that basically, you know, the tools I have left are getting further and further limited. And there's just no doubt about it. So I think just the board and obviously the region has been talked about in a number of forums, this structural financial issue, it's getting to the point where I just can't get much further to solve some of those issues. So it gets to a much higher policy level discussion that I know the chairman has been leading and a number of you. But the reality is we are getting very close to that. You know, I just do not have that many more things I can turn to. So, and some of the things that we're talking about are not sustainable over time. They tend to be some of these are one-time things you can do. But we will continue to do this. And we're going to continue to manage as tightly as we can. And there are other areas that we can continue to go after. But when you talk the scale that we're talking about, it's awful hard to get there. And to be frank, even on the revenue side, it's awfully hard. We get roughly $1 million in revenue, maybe a little bit more per 1,000 passengers. Okay, so we've lost 100,000 passengers over the last 8 or so years. So if we got all those back tomorrow, I only get $100 million. Right, and we got a $290 million hold. So those are you know, again stark numbers, but it's the reality of what we're dealing with. And that's, I think, again, it gets to this larger structural financial issue. So with that, I will turn over to Tom first to get into the capital and the Dennis and operating.
Just to come full circle, sure. on your comments, mm-hmm. on the discussion we're about to have on the FY17, tying it together, obviously, the SafeTrak program that you discussed on the capital side has a big impact on the operating side because we've essentially, on a lot of the surges, actually discouraged riders because we wouldn't have the capacity when we shut down parts of the Blue Line or shut down parts of the Red Line to accommodate all the potential riders out there. So in a sense, what we've done on the capital side has produced the disappointing results in terms of ridership and revenue on the revenue side, which we couldn't anticipate when we first, as a board, approved this budget.
SafeTrak wasn't even identified.
Wasn't in existence as a program.
Right.
At that point. So that, and the only other comment I would make is I believe you're going to be leaving us, Mr. General Manager, after this meeting. And we'll not be at the board meeting.
Leaving? So, I'm just going to be...
Careful with language there, Mike. My goodness.
Attending a meeting.
I didn't want to keep on thinking we were so disappointed in your performance. The discussion we're going to have for the next hour. We disinvited you to attend the board meeting.
No, I have to go to the budget committees in Annapolis again to talk about the same issues, to be frank.
Michael?
Yes.
Just a comment on your comment, though. Because your comment is like, well, SafeTrack caused the ridership to go down. Didn't anticipate it. If that didn't happen, maybe things would be okay. What Paul said is that every rider returned to the system that we have lost in the last 8 years. Every one of them came back tomorrow. We still won't have enough money. Okay? That's what you said. And I hear you. If every rider came back that we lost in the last 8 years, we are still way short of where we need to be beginning in 19. And I want to stress that because we cannot continue to put out excuses that make no sense. This system is not failing because we're losing riders. This system is failing because from the beginning it never had enough money to be run properly. And I can't sit here and have someone make an excuse like that, because that's what gets us into the situation in this region where every elected official says they'll muddle through somehow. And what Paul is saying, and Paul, this is important, because when I say it, nobody listens. But when you say it, when you say we are in trouble, people listen. And Paul is saying, at the end of the next year, we're done. He has no more tools in the toolbox, or gimmicks in the cupboard. We're done. And I don't think there is an awareness or acceptance on this board, let alone in the region, that that's where we are. So that's all my only comment.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we could have this discussion for an hour or two, because it reflects not only what has happened over the last year with SafeTrack, but as you've pointed out, this system reached its revenue and ridership peak in 2008. So we've gone now almost nine years with declining ridership, which reflects much broader trends than just SafeTrack's. You know, it reflects what's happening in the federal government and the federal workforce. I think it reflects hiring patterns. It reflects rise of things like people working at home and the dispersion of job sites away from the central core into the outer beltway, as well as the decline in gas prices. So I didn't want to make it that I was just pointing out SafeTrack for our decline in ridership. But I don't think it's a problem that can just be solved by putting up the shibboleth and saying, you know, we need money. We have some basic issues in terms of what is the service pattern, what is our ridership, and what are our revenue needs that we will have to address over the next couple years. So with that, gentlemen, Mr. Anasecki, Mr. Webster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, yes, great news to report from a capital delivery standpoint. We have Metro's invested $599 million through the first half of FY17. That's the highest level of reinvestment in the system during a six-month period in Metro's history. And again, as a reminder, the current budget is now $1.1 billion amended up by the board in November from the original $950 million. During the second quarter, we expect this continued rate of high investment, and as the general manager mentioned, we expect to return to the board this spring with an additional amendment. So the $599 million invested during the first half exceeded our previous forecast, or our forecast from back in October, November, by about $57 million, or about 10%. Improved performance was primarily driven, again, by delivery and acceptance of rail cars, buses, the SafeTrack program, and construction of the new bus maintenance facilities. And $599 million is about 54% of the amended $1.1 billion program. Through the second quarter, Metro invested $235 million in the railcar investments category. Railcar investments include acquisition of railcars, rehabilitation and maintenance of railcars, and railcar maintenance facilities. So roughly 40% of the overall capital program, or capital budget. 60 new 7,000 series railcars were conditionally accepted during the quarter, bringing the total for the year to 112. Through the first half of FY17, Metro invested $53 million in railcar maintenance and overhaul, both preventive maintenance and component rehabilitation, to maintain the safety and reliability of the railcar fleet. The year-end forecast listed here of $101 or $102 million assumes that the railcar parts will continue to be charged to the operating budget due to procurement limitations due to federal funding requirement associated with federal funding requirements and a lack of to date a lack of available non-federal funding. We expect to update the year-end forecast this spring to incorporate these capital parts and to relieve some of the pressure on the operating materials and supplies budget. In railcar systems, Metro invested $27 million, or rail systems, excuse me, through the second quarter of FY17, and this is primarily in propulsion, signals and communications, NTSB recommended actions, including replacement of track circuits. The project to replace the Generation 2 track circuits, the multi-year project, was completed during the second quarter. Some procurement process activities, in particularly in the propulsion power and the radio infrastructure project, put those projects slightly behind our baseline forecast for the first half of the year. Those contracts have now been awarded, and we expect a pretty significant ramp-up in the second half of the year in terms of the radio project and in some propulsion power state of good repair and capacity activities. Mm-hmm. The project teams with these responsible for these systems projects are now meeting with senior management on a monthly basis, encourage coordination, facilitate working around problems, and to ensure that these projects stay on track. Track and structures rehabilitation, $87 million was invested during the first half of the year. This, of course, includes the substantial investment through the Safe Track Initiative, which is included in the fixed rail program. With the addition of the June Safe Track surges, we're now forecasting total investment in this in the overall category here of about $148 million by the end of the year, slightly above the current, or $7 million above the current budget. And station and passenger facilities, this category is ahead of schedule as well. $78 million was invested during the first half of the year. Orange and Blue Line rehabilitation work continues to advance. Escalator and elevator rehabilitation and replacement and parking facility rehabilitation programs are on schedule. We expect station systems improvements, including station lighting and station cooling activities, to ramp up again in the second half of the year in the spring. Good news to report, again, great progress in the bus capital program during the first half of the year. All of the 100 buses that were scheduled for delivery this year have been delivered and are now in service. The bus rehabilitation and maintenance activities are on schedule. And importantly, the new Cinderbed Road bus facility in Fairfax County is nearing completion, and the construction of the new Andrews Federal bus facility in Prince George's County, construction is now underway. Both of those projects are well ahead of the schedule in our baseline forecast. 207 new paratransit vehicles have been ordered and are expected to be delivered during the second half of the year. So low spending in the first half, but that should catch up by the end of the year. And finally, Metro invested $26 million through the second quarter in the business supports program. This includes IT infrastructure and systems to support financial management and maintenance management. It includes a new work on a new timekeeping system, the initiative to provide Wi-Fi in rail stations, environmental compliance activities, new police vehicles, and those sorts of support projects. We expect spending in this category to basically be on budget at the end of the year. So to recap, in November we projected that the FY17 capital investment would be between $1.1 and $1.2 billion. $600 million was invested through the first half of the year, quite a bit above our baseline forecast from the $950 budget. And as scheduled, we expect to return to the board this spring with a proposed amendment to increase the overall 17 budget for additional rail cars for Safe Track and for the bus maintenance facilities at Cinderbed Road and Andrews Federal. In the interim, the winter and spring, we will be realigning budget capacity between safety and state of good repair projects that are ahead of schedule to continue managing the program before we come back to the board for that amendment. That concludes the capital section.
Thank you. Let's go through the operating section, and then we'll open it up to questions.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the operating side of the budget, management has taken aggressive actions, as the GM mentioned a little bit earlier, to reduce cost in light of expected revenue trend. And so through December of 2016, the total operating revenue is off budget by $65 million, $64 million of which is actually coming from passenger revenue, which includes fares primarily. And as the GM noted, there are several factors that led to that drop-off, and so I won't go through those at this time. However, the management actions that have been taken through December have reduced the operating cost by $59 million for the first 6 months of the year, primarily by eliminating 500 positions, which the GM announced earlier during last year, as well as reducing some non-rep healthcare expenses, and also holding back on some non-essential, non-personal spending. When you focus on the numbers themselves, you can see on this slide that total operating revenues through December is $383 million compared to a budget of $447. And on respect to operating expenses, Metro spent $819 million for the period, which is, as I said earlier, $59 million less than the budget itself. And when you go back actually a year earlier, the expense for this, for the same period this fiscal year, is actually down by almost 3%. As a result, Metro was able to end the first half of the year with a $6 million budget shortfall compared to the $65 million that we are off on the revenue side. This slide projects Metro's expenditures for the rest of the year. At this point, we're projecting that Metro will spend $893 million over the next 6 months, which includes $637 million in personnel, which is really the worst-case scenario. On personnel, as you'll see on this slide, we have assumed that the impact of the management changes that I referred to earlier, including the 500, as well as the additional 200 position reductions that we're currently working through, will be gradual. And I should also note at this point that the first half expenditures for personnel included $18 million more of preventive maintenance, which had the effect of reducing overall cost to the operating budget. And that particular piece will not be available in the second half of the year. We also know for the second half, we've gone through the inauguration, the Women's March, and expect cherry blossoms, things that were not part of the first half, and so we expect the expenses to be slightly higher. But given the push that the GM has put on reducing costs, the actual reductions in personnel may actually be better than we are assuming here, and that will actually put us in a better position to address the rest of the deficits, which we'll go through in a minute. With respect to services, we estimate that services for the next 6 months will come to $254 million. Again, when you compare that to the first 6 months of the year, there's at least $12 million of services that we expect to come in the second half that was not part of the first half. For example, we are expecting to spend at least $6 million in terms of additional track inspections and maintenance. Again, with the changes that we've made to augment that particular set of activities, this increased cost goes, again, to the work that's being done with respect to reliability and safety on the system. In addition, we also expect that Abilities Right to come in January 1 of this year, and while we are in the process of implementing that particular program, we do not now expect that they will come in during this period. So the savings that we built into the budget for that particular purpose will not materialize. With respect to materials and supplies, which we expect will be $130 million in for the year, this again goes to the parts and supplies and materials that are, support the bus and rail overhaul primarily, which do not qualify for federal funding. But as Tom mentioned a little bit earlier, part of our strategy going forward actually is identifying funds that will allow some of these costs to shift back to the capital. And again, we'll discuss that in a minute. And to offset the remaining shortfall, which you see here, $75 million, we've identified additional actions that should get us to a balanced budget by the end of the fiscal year. So in terms of the new actions to further offset the revenue shortfall, Metro is currently in the process of disposing some real estate assets. That particular action will generate a significant amount of money that will allow us to actually to move at least $25 million of the cost for parts and supplies, which is currently in the operating budget, to capital. The reason why this is feasible is because the assets that are being disposed, you know, include federal funds and therefore typically need to reside on the capital budget. And so this shift provides some relief on the operating budget. We are also reducing non-revenue vehicles, shutting down travels and conferences for the rest of the year. While the savings from these efforts will be nominal, we are looking to make sure that we've closed every door and every penny counts. And some of the other things that we're planned for the next 6 months that are actually already in place include reducing call center hours and reducing staffing in that particular area. We are also, and we have already done this, frozen both personnel and non-personnel expenditures that we consider as non-essential or that can be deferred for the remainder of the year. This we expect will provide significant resources that will provide funding for us to close the budget gap. And as recently as earlier this week, we announced a new initiative with respect to absenteeism and workers' compensation, which again will reduce overall overtime across the organization, which, again, to the extent that those come in quickly, will go towards this program. And if necessary, we will temporarily suspend contributions to the workers' compensation and third-party reserve fund. Again, if you recall, this is a requirement that the board imposed some time ago that requires us to set aside about 20% of expected next year's cost. It doesn't mean that we will not pay those costs. It simply means that that reserve will not be necessary, at least on a temporary basis. And finally, we may also be able to apply $17 million of our prior budget surpluses to enable us to balance the budget. We believe that all things being equal, that all of these efforts will enable us to erase the $75 million that we've projected for the rest of the year, which means that we will not be going back to the local jurisdictions, as the general manager has said. And we intend to come back to this board in the next quarter to update you on our progress. With that, Mr. Chairman, we'll answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you. Let me start off with one or two questions, and then we'll go around the table for other board members. Just sticking on the subject that we're on, the gap is projected to be around $75 million at this point in time for the FY75 operating budget. Could you go through your list and just try and assign numbers to some of these things that you've identified? And I ask that because I think this is a large amount of money, and as a board we have to feel comfortable that your numbers are reasonable and realistic and that you won't be, as you say, coming back to the jurisdictions to fill in a subsidy gap in the final quarter of the year.
Okay. Thank you for that question. I mentioned a couple of things, starting with the real estate assets that are being disposed. If you recall, the board has approved several real estate transactions over the last couple of months, and we are at various degrees of closing those transactions. In the aggregate, we are looking at about $29 million of total real estate dispositions. We have assumed that $25 million of those will be based on where we are in the closing process, will be available for the FY17 fiscal year cycle. Then there's we mentioned that we are also looking at reducing call center hours and reducing 10 positions from that particular locations. That could generate, in a fiscal year, $1 million. For half of a year, that could provide about $500,000. We are free between the freeze of personnel and non-personnel services and the deferral of some expenses that could be deferred for this fiscal year. Again, as the GM pointed out, you cannot defer everything forever. But for this fiscal year, we're expecting to get between $15 and $20 million from that exercise.
Which is that?
From the deferral of both expenses and personnel and non-personnel expenses for personnel and non-personnel expenses for the rest of the year, which again will include deferral of some expenses that were planned within the next 6 months, could produce about $15 to $20 million. The absenteeism initiative that staff announced this week, or the GM announced this week, is estimated to save $2 million, primarily from overtime. And I did mention that there's an $8 million suspension to the damage reserve fund, as well as $17 million of prior year budget surplus. If you add all of those together, you're at close to $70 million of the 75. Again, given the size of the budget that we're dealing with, we believe that we can, especially with the directions and push that the general manager has imposed on all of us, that we can find whatever is needed to make sure that we do not go back to the jurisdictions.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Let me just shift to the capital budget for a minute and your chart. I think it's slide 10, which shows the just for the benefit of the other board members and the public. Now, we initially back spring of last year approved the budget of $950 million, and then we came back and approved amendment to go up to $1.1 billion. And now you're indicating by this chart, graph, whatever you want to call it, that that may go as high as another $100 million. Up to 1.2. Do you have a better fix at this point as to where are we between the 1.1 and the 1.2? Are we likely to be asked to approve another $100 million, or is it likely to be, as one of your charts indicated, some maybe as low as $25
million? So the 1.1 to 1.2 range is the same range as we presented to the committee in November. We are refining the forecast as we go here, and as the year progresses, you get more information. I expect to be in the $1.125 to $1.150 range, so less than the full 1.2. But the caution there is some of these projects are really ramping up, so in particular the radio and wireless project. That's why we're continuing to keep that range and saying we could get up to $1.2 billion because there are projects with great potential for the second half of the year.
And I think I understand that.
If I could just add, it's also been a great construction season. You know, and it's just a reality. So
we've had a construction season all this whole year. It's never no snow.
That's what I'm saying. But I mean, all that affects the burn rate.
Mr. Webster, I guess the corollary question I wanted to ask is, how would you propose to finance that increase? Do you propose to come back to the board for an increase that the jurisdictions would have to come up with, or is there another method that you've identified for financing this increase in the capital budget?
Mr. Goldman, at this point, we do not plan to go back to the jurisdictions to finance either the operating or the capital, any capital budget funding requirements for this fiscal year. Part of the cash flow management plan that we've developed internally anticipates not just this expected potential change, but also some of the other things that are going on with respect to the temporary suspension of some of the FTA funds because of the lack of the establishments of the commission. So, I mean, we have a broader strategy around cash flow that will allow us to meet these goals without going back to the jurisdictions for this fiscal year.
So I assume that means this would either be financed through use of existing line of credit or the money that you expect to come in from the FTA.
Or additional actions that the board may have to take, but that does not require immediate from the jurisdictions. Correct.
Thank you. I'll stop there for a minute, and we'll start Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. So I want to look. I'll look at the capital budget first, and so you know, two areas where we've exceeded estimates are in the bus facility. So can you speak specifically about some of the challenges that we've experienced with Cinderbed and what's going on there? And what I'm interested in is whether or not those cost overruns give us any reason to believe that there are going to be some future operating impacts, given any issues in building that facility?
I don't expect that to be the case. What you're seeing here are accelerated expenditures. So what we had forecasted to be spent in FY18
okay.
is now being spent in FY17.
Okay.
So there should not be, as a result of that, any long-term operating impact.
All right, so there's no fundamental issues with constructing that facility. We're just getting it done earlier.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And what about paratransit vehicles? Why are we so ahead of what we expected in terms of purchasing those?
Paratransit vehicle purchase that was scheduled for last year was delayed. It pushed into FY17. So this is actually the FY16 purchase happening in FY17. We didn't know that at the time the budget was adopted in last spring. So this is truing up for underspend last year, now occurring this year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And then, Mr. Goldman, so we're doing operating at this time as well?
Yes, sir.
So if we could speak a little bit about, I appreciate very much that you're looking at all management actions to deal with any future subsidy issues, but can you just speak a little bit more about any headwinds that we face in the second half of the year, absent the weather, assuming that that's not going to happen, any other headwinds that could really throw into chaos your plan to not have to go to the jurisdictions? Just
yeah.
What are the things that we should look for?
The other thing I think that we have to watch besides the weather is what happens with the federal workforce.
Okay.
I mean, that's a big one.
Okay.
So we've got to watch that. And obviously, if anything else happens, you know, at that level, the federal level, on the funding side. But the biggest concern I would have is the freezing of the federal workforce and how that plays out on our ridership.
Okay. And one of the potential new actions, I know it's...
Excuse me. Yeah. And the other thing is if there's any other, like, major marches or things of that sort, again, those are big, you know, these are just, they're not defined yet, but if something occurs, we've got to throw a lot of people out there, a lot more service. Those are things that could come into play.
Okay. Thank you.
Are those good in terms of revenue? Do marchers produce more revenue than...
Yeah, they generate revenue, but, you know,
they
generally...
They also generate subsidy.
You're only getting 50% in terms of it, and then on top of that, you're paying in those situations. You're paying overtime, you know, because you're bringing in people. You know, it's not just regular service.
And then just the last question, terms of furloughs, and I'm not suggesting that you take any arrows out of your quiver, but can you just give us a fiscal impact of that?
It's very limited. The juice probably isn't worth the squeeze, to be frank, because the reality is, you know, you can't furlough unless you're in cut service. You don't get much bang for your buck. Yeah. You know, unless I take a bus operator on furlough or a rail operator or a station manager or a police officer, that's where most of our labor costs are. So you just don't get that much. As you can imagine, I'm balancing, you know, both morale issues and everything else
yeah.
I'm trying to deal with. We are not... You know, the non-reps have not gotten raises in a number of years. There's nothing proposed in 18. So I'm very cautious on using that. But I've got to keep it in, as you said, in my quiver.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate and respect that, but I would very much encourage you, if it ever got to the point where we're talking about that is the last tool that you need to deploy before you come to the jurisdictions, that you have that conversation again, because I think the associated impacts can be far more than just the 17 budget. So, you know, please keep that in reserve, and let's have a further conversation if it ever should come to pass.
I agree.
Mr. Augustine?
My comment is not as much about this report or everything. It is what it is. I do have a concern, though, for us as a committee when I look at the next slide, which is the next steps slide that they had, where we're scheduled to approve the budget, the outreach report, and the equity analysis all on one day, I just can't see where that's reasonable. I mean, is there a way for us to, and I understand why we're not having the meeting on the 9th, but we still should have the information, I think, such that we get a chance to talk with our jurisdictions, talk with our folks, really get a sense. I mean, the idea of doing all of that in one day, I just have a lot of trouble with that. So is there a way for someone could respond to that, please?
My understanding is that, and I share your concern, is that the general manager intends to present some documents and the studies earlier in the month. And so we won't be just waiting till the weekend before the board meeting to begin to have that information. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's at least what I understood from the secretary's office.
So is the expectation then that although we're not meeting on the 9th, that we would have those documents that would otherwise be available on the 9th at that time?
It is to try to get that out on the 9th. And I think we just got to take a look at the schedule and see if there's another way we can meet before the board meeting. Is your point right, basically?
Absolutely, yes. So we could have an opportunity to discuss before everything, trying to get everything to be done within one day.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Costa? Ms. Porter?
Just a comment that I'm very supportive of the changes and the cutbacks that the general manager is making. And also, I applaud you for continuing the accelerated schedule of CIP expenditures and the preventive maintenance we're doing. I think that's definitely taking us in the right direction.
I have a couple questions. If we go to slide 14, and Tom, this is under operating, but I want to address this to you, if I could. So on this here, there's a total personnel expense, but in the breakout of the slides under the capital budget, I cannot see what the personnel expenses are attributed to that. It's all project. And to the best of my knowledge, it's $400 million in acquisition, make up the $1.1, $1.2 billion. Could we get a breakdown of what the personnel expenses are for the rest of that capital budget, similar to what we're looking at here with operating?
Yes, we'd be happy to provide.
Just give us another way to look at that to see where we're spending. And also, if you could break that down, because I know a lot of this has been with SafeTrack, so how much of that is actually our own labor folks versus those people who may have come in from the outside because of outside help with consultants. So that would be one piece of it. The second part of it, Dennis, there's conversation about going out and getting an additional $100 million in short-term borrowing to carry us through a cash flow situation that we're looking at. That was in some of our information that we got. Is that something we're looking at?
That's correct. Part of the next steps includes anticipated request to the board to expand the current line of credit.
Okay, so a couple of years ago we were up around $500 million back when we did not have the automatic drawdowns from the federal government. Where are we now on that?
Thank you, Mr. Cochran. Yes, 2 years ago we were at $500 million in terms of short-term credit. At this point, as you recall, we reduced that to $250 million, and currently we are at $150 of the $250 million capacity. So there is some current capacity. What we're anticipating doing, again, if you recall a few years ago, as the GM pointed out, we were only spending 65% of the capital program. Now we're investing 95% of the capital program, which again requires additional cash flow. And so what we're trying to do is to make sure there's additional and adequate capacity as we anticipate not just the capital investments, but also what's going on the revenue side, to make sure fundamentally that we do not go back to the jurisdictions to ask for more money.
Okay, so this is really to carry us until we have the next payments of the subsidies, and plus we're looking at some long-term debt as well, so that this
just gets us until we have enough cash to cover all of these capital expenditures?
That's correct.
Okay. Would early payment from any of the jurisdictions help with that?
Absolutely. It's always good to get money in earlier, but you still need a higher degree of flexibility given the size of the capital program. So, but getting early payments, we'll take it any day.
Okay. And one last question for Tom. So you're going to come back to us and ask for a raise in the capital budget from 1-1 to 1-2 or some variance there. What happens if the board says no?
Well, the projects that are underway now, rail cars, the construction of these facilities, those are going to continue. So we're going to have a challenge. Stopping capital projects with long multi-year lead times on short notice is a very challenging thing to do.
And potentially expensive.
And potentially very expensive because these things are on contract and in many cases the work is in progress. So Metro would still, in many cases, owe the vendor for the work completed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. A couple comments and a couple questions. To go to Malcolm's concern about the meeting on the 9th, because it's somewhat cryptic as to what's happening. I cannot be here on the 9th. The reason I can't be here is I will be part of the delegation on behalf of the District of Columbia going to Wall Street to meet with our bond rating agents, which we do every year. So I just have to be in New York on the 9th. And I can't even be on the telephone because I'll be in meetings all day long. So I requested that we not vote in the Finance Committee on the 9th. So as Paul mentioned, all the information can get out. You could even have a Finance Committee meeting. If somehow we all come to an agreement before the 9th on what our budget's going to be for next year, then we can vote. My concern is there will be a controversial issue. It'll come down to one vote, and I'll be in New York. And that's the concern I have. So somehow, I think, Paul, your recommendation, get all the information out. Michael, if you want to meet, you can meet. But as an accommodation to me, I would request that we not vote unless there's no controversy, then we can go ahead and do it. Okay? So just so everybody understands, that's what the reason for the delay is. A couple of questions. $125 million. All right. The obvious question is, how did we miss this? We knew we were going into a construction phase. We knew ridership was going to drop. And yet, in our estimates for 17, we were off by a big amount of money, $125 million. So how did we miss that? And secondly, as you discuss how we missed it, are we missing it again for 18? Ridership is not coming back. Ridership is going down. We have an estimate for 18 that's out there that we did not know of the $125 million drop when we made the estimate for 18. So how do we know that the 18 estimate is accurate, given we didn't know we had a $125 million shortfall in 17? So number one, how did we miss this thing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the general manager mentioned a little bit earlier, when the budget was established last year, there was no safe track. That was not part of the plan. And if you do the calculation of the 125, about $50 million of that is safe track. And we were, when safe track was announced, if you recall, we were clear that it was going to have a $40 million impact on the operating budget in terms of revenue. The difference between that and the 50, again, is the extension of safe track and obviously the higher impact that has had. So we did not miss that part of the estimation. The part that we missed was the ridership part of it. Obviously, service quality has been a huge impact, and of the other factors that the GM has described. The trend that we saw at the tail end of the budget development process is exacerbated. That was the part that accounts for the difference, the $75 million difference between the 125 and the $50 million out of SafeTrack. With respect to FY18, we adjusted the FY18 numbers based on what we saw going into the budget cycle. And what we've seen so far is not inconsistent with the projections. And you'll recall sometime in the past that it was suggested that we were too pessimistic with respect to the ridership projections and our view at that time, and remains so today, is that what we're projecting for next year is consistent. And if you look year over year, the numbers are significantly less than the revenue projections in the prior year.
Okay. So you'll keep us informed, please, and I know you will, if you see that your projections are wrong as we go forward, that there are going to be more shortfalls. Okay, because this is a big number. Secondly, many of the fixes for 17 that we're using to try and offset this 125 are one-time fixes. They're firing people, they're doing this, that, and the other thing that are not available in 18. So how are we addressing the large shortfall in 18 if we don't have the fixes from 17?
If you recall, part of the $290 million, what is the shortfall? I mean, the $290 million that the GM announced as part of his budget proposal is the shortfall for 18, which has already accounted for the revenue impact based on what we're seeing in FY17. It is being addressed, again, in a shared process, as the GM has announced, based on his proposal of fare adjustments, service reductions, as well as additional jurisdictional contributions. If all of those things play out as he has proposed, then we continue to manage effectively the way we've managed so far, we will not need those one-time or extraordinary reductions that we've made this year, because they will not be available next year, but they will not be necessary next year.
Okay. Three comments. When you mentioned in response to Michael something about deferring expenses, that somehow we'll balance 17 by deferring expenses into 18. In 18, we don't have any money to cover what we have. How do you defer expenses into 18 that will be covered in 18 when we don't have the money in 18 to cover what we have? So maybe it's just an observation. Maybe it doesn't even require an explanation. It's just a concern that when you roll things, you're doing an accounting measure to roll things into another year, and the money's not there to cover that either. So maybe you can take a shot at it, maybe not.
No, what I meant there, Mr. Chairman, is you're simply deferring some of the projects that would have started now to a later date. They're funded in 18. They will not be essentially new activities. We just will not start them today to save in the short run, you know, that cost. But that expense, which is why I pointed out, that expense will still have to be incurred at some point going forward.
Yes.
And those provisions have been made.
Okay, an observation on furloughs. Christian is more than right. In the district, we did this four times, and at no time did it ever work. It always cost us more money at the end of the day and more pain and suffering. I think organizations like this don't take advice, so I don't ask you to take mine. Actually, go out and do it, and you'll find out for yourself it doesn't work. But I can tell you, four times, it didn't work at any time we ever did it.
Mr. Chairman, I always take your advice.
You always take my advice? Thank you, Mr. General Manager. And finally, on the capital budget, again, I think, Jim, I don't know that the information is still there. We are going to extend our line of credit. Right now, we have a maximum of $250 million. And at some point very soon, we're going to be maxed out on that. So we are now going to ask for another $100 million beyond what we have the capacity to do now. Does everybody understand that? Then we are going to borrow long-term, somewhere in the future, a fair amount of money. We're going to be asked to borrow long-term, you know, over $500 million in order to do this program. So just so everybody understands where we are, I happen to support the idea, but that's what we're going to be asked to do in order to get this done. So everybody will be more explanation as time goes on, but everybody has to understand where we are on this, because these are actions that are draconian actions, to say the least, to get us to where we're going. But going back to Paul's earlier comments, even when we do all this, the end is coming quickly. So I just want everybody to be aware of that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to continue a portion of the conversation with Mr. Cochran and Mr. Evans in that, as you are making these adjustments in the 17 budget, we're going to be here approving in a short time the FY18 predicated on that. And I think for the increases that we are going to be accepting in it, what sense of certainty or confidence that would be the baseline and not the most marginal for the FY19, because I think the concern from the jurisdictions are we'll accept the increases that are needed, we recognize the improvements, but do we see ourselves in terms of an operational level when we adopt the FY18, that is going to be the baseline, so that FY19 would not have those sleep deep increases?
I mean,
and I can see the smile of Mr.
You're projecting out.
Yeah, that's where we put
months,
our budgets.
So you're doing the best you can based on professional judgment, mm-hmm. Based on numbers. That's what we do. But, I mean, we also have things working in our favor.
Right.
SafeTrack comes to an end. The rail cars are getting more reliable. The track is getting more reliable. So those things are working in our favors. We have the issues of potential federal workforce issues. We have PREA funding that, still out there, right? There's things out there that I'm not going to, there's clouds out there for sure. But, based on what we know now, I think these are good estimates. We have the CBA that we're still in the middle of negotiations on, for instance. That's out there. So I'm not... I'm not trying to hide anything from you that may come up. But, at some point we have to get our best estimate of what that is so that we can all, get around those numbers. And I think that the numbers that we put out there, again, we've been watching them, and I think they're very close. But, again, I can't control some of these things that could occur nor can the board.
I appreciate the fact that is where we are so that we can actually measure ourselves there and recognize that there may not be any more tricks in any other basket for you to go to, and that we are starting to move forward so that we can be looking at what is the actual cost that we are going to be able to say this is what we need to make this system run effectively and safely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to mention a comment. I think we just started seeing, as the chairman pointed out, the scraping of the bottom of the barrel. Okay? And we've heard all of the tricks that are getting played out, and I appreciate your management's skills at doing that. But, Mr. Chairman, maybe we need to also think about some other draconian revenue enhancements along with this next budget. I may throw one out. I asked the staff to look at what Los Angeles is doing on naming the stations. Okay? I know that's controversial. They're doing it in L.A. On the heels of their third half-cent sales tax, which passed by a supermajority of two-thirds. So they're now talking about Verizon Station, et cetera, and... And there's all these caveats in their policy. Therese McMillan, who was the acting Federal Transit Administrator, is now at LAMTA, and she sent me the documents that their board approved recently. And although this could be super, super controversial, and there's probably a lot of other ways we might be able to raise revenue, and I don't have those tricks in my head right now, but there's one idea that I think would inspire people to take this seriously, because we are really looking at the bottom of the barrel here. And I'm worried. So maybe, Mr. Chairman, we need to also think about revenue enhancements.
Mr. Boulder, I can tell you that the Secretary informed me that staff is looking at that issue, and they will be making a presentation on those alternative revenue raising matters in the near future. And one of them would be naming. Another idea that floated out by someone sending an email was the idea of doing digital advertising in the stations. And so there's some ideas that are out there, and staff is going to work through and make a presentation later in the spring.
So we'll just keep an eye on that, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Down the road.
Yes. Ms. Carmody. Mr. Svenberg, you're always good in being very patient to wait till the very end. Sort of
thank
like
you.
Justice Kagan waiting at the very end to ask your questions. Please.
Thank you. Mr. Wiedefeld, a question on the hiring and spending freeze. Is that
something you see as being a year-long freeze, or what's the time frame you're looking at, and is that part of a more comprehensive review of staffing and alignment of what is needed in various departments and an overall review moving forward?
Yeah, well, that review has been ongoing. Kind That's what led to right. the 500 and the yeah. and the additional right. 200 we're doing now. For right now, it's 6 months, basically a freeze. But we, again, assessing, just like the call center, something that we just put out, for instance. Mm-hmm. So we'll continue to do that. But again, the larger point is just, again, the box is getting smaller and smaller right. where I can look. Mm-hmm. Again, because it eventually gets down to just service. The people that provide the service and maintain what we have and protect us when we use the system. So that's unfortunately where I'm finding myself.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I also agree with Mr. Dorsey and the chairman. I've never seen a furlough program ultimately achieve what people hoped it achieved. In fact, in most cases, it has cost money. Not much, maybe, but in the scheme of things, but it hasn't had the intended outcomes. And along the lines of the chairman's first question in terms of projections and how we got here, particularly with the ridership, even if SafeTrack wasn't formally announced at the time the budget was adopted, the projections for Metro Rail ridership were stagnant, if not trending down, but yet the budgeted projection was quite an increase. So what are you looking in that area, in that area, how are you going to look at that area moving forward and how you look at your projections? And how difficult is that going to be? Because as the chairman said, this is a really important aspect of the budget here, obviously.
We in developing the FY18 budget, what we did was take a very hard look on ridership. The previous year, we had assumed a slight increase, which instead of a slight increase, actually was a continuing trend in reduction. And so for FY18, what we've done is assume that ridership will be essentially where it is. We have, at the same time, also ramped up and ramping up digital advertising in the system. We are looking at other expanding both transit benefits, the number of folks on transit benefits, expanding advertising, looking at other aspects of revenue. Obviously, the fare increase is also part of it. And without SafeTrack, next year, I know there will be some continuing maintenance activities on this track, but if you take that out of the system, the ridership project, the revenue projection that we've identified for next year, I believe, is reasonable and should not result in what we're seeing with respect to FY17.
Okay. And just a general comment, I share several of the concerns the chairman expressed about our overall, sort of situation fiscally. And not only, Metro may not, and Mr. Wiedefeld and his team may not have the tools to move forward in a good way, but I know from our perspective here in Virginia anyway, localities are looking at things, and we too may not have the tools available to, cobble things together. I just want to put that out there because I know in Virginia, the Commonwealth is going to be experiencing a real challenge in the transit and transportation area moving forward for the next, 3 to 5 years, for sure. We have a cliff coming in 20. So, yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Gentlemen, if I could focus on the chart that Mr. Smedberg was referring to. It's the one called Appendix Ridership, which he was just referring to. Let's stick it up. We spent most of our time talking about ridership trends. Now, this is, it says Appendix Ridership. This one. We spent most of our time talking about trends with Metro Rail, the rail system, and the impact of SafeTrack. But when you look at this chart and bus ridership, you also see that bus ridership is trending down 10% by month, basically since July. I guess what I'm asking is, do you have any insight? What's going on with bus ridership? Is it a product?
Is it related to rail? B, is it circulator, that people are moving to DC circulator and away from Metrobus? Or is it part of the broader trends of the demographics of the area where there's less federal employees, less ridership in our core routes?
It is a bit of all of the above, but one thing I looked at is when you look at bus ridership that connects to rail, that's around 10% down, or a little bit more. The bus only is down about 5%. So that, again, that gets to maybe these other issues that are going on in the marketplace. That you've seen that. That's what's driving that. And again, that's where, you know, I mentioned the other day that, you know, there may be a new normal here just because of the changing, some of the things that you mentioned earlier, the changing demographics, the changing employment picture, the changing how we transfer data, everything. You know, it's a 24-hour work cycle now that we're on. It's just totally different. So that may be, you know, where we're starting to find ourselves. Again, those are things that we need to be aware of, obviously, whatever we can do. But the core for us is get the DORN system as safe and as reliable as we can. And then, you know, those other factors will play out as they do. But the buses, I think that's pointing to that it's more than just, and also the history of the declining ridership is pointing that there's something else going on here as well.
You know, just also say, if I could, you know, some of the regional systems have experienced some upticks in bus ridership as we push people away from rail solutions to other means. Some of them have found their way to regional bus routes. So, you know, overall, you look at bus performance, it's a far better picture. Right. Than rail, all things considered.
Yeah. The other one, the other fact that I've been looking at is the vehicle miles traveled has been going down in the region. So that's another odd statistic, given, you know, all the activity here. Again, that's reflecting how people are traveling, just differently. Well, we're not traveling at all. We're not traveling.
The gentleman presented the study in the beginning when we first started looking at these ridership projections was that the vehicle miles had been declining in the area. So I guess my final comment would be just, I think, this bus ridership is something that we need to keep a focus on and not lose sight of as we sort of focus on Metro Rail and sort of trying to much more serious decline in Metro Rail and just trying to get a handle on what is happening with bus as we go forward into 2018 and 2019, whether we need to do something to either encourage more bus ridership or to take a more in-depth look at what the route structure is. To reduce one of the costs of the bus operation. I don't have any more questions. Any other questions from members of the committee? Thank you. I will ask Mr. Evans to bring us up to date on where we go from here for the rest of the day, and I think he has a motion or a request for the table.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. In accordance with the bylaws, I, Jack Evans, request that the Board of Directors convene an executive session to discuss the following matters pursuant to Article 2, Paragraph 9, Subsections A, budgetary matters that may affect legal positions, WMATA contracts, or sensitive relationships with local jurisdictions or the federal government, and B, litigation, investigations, and other legal matters requiring the provision of legal advice or consultation with counsel and staff members, C, personnel or labor issues, including discussions of labor contracts and labor negotiations, considerations or interviews of candidates for employment, and the assignment, appointment, promotion, performance, demotion, or resignation of individuals, and H, development of WMATA position or strategy on pending or proposed federal or state legislation. Is there a second? Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We'll adjourn upstairs for the executive session.